Welcome to this journalism.co.uk podcast. This week, we're looking at the nitty-gritty of looking after your finances as a freelance journalist. Being a freelance means being your own business. It's a busy time, researching, pitching, writing, editing. You'll find plenty of advice on all of those things on journalism.co.uk. So it's no wonder that the money side of things can sometimes pass us by. But staying on top of your finances is essential, or at least getting someone else to do it for you. From taxes to expenses, late payments to limited companies, we asked those in the know about some of the things you ought to be thinking about. One of our guests is a chartered accountant, the other a freelance who's been through it all himself. What follows is general information based on journalistic research. It doesn't constitute financial advice, and you should always do your own research and seek advice based on your specific circumstances. So, where do we begin? Let's assume you're new to the world of freelancing and have worked for an employer in the past. With them, your payslip arrived, the tax has been taken off already, and what's left is yours. That's the first crucial difference.
My name is Andrew Minsky. I'm a chartered accountant and a partner at Nyman Linden, and I've been in practice for almost 10 years. The biggest difference is you need to effectively provide for the future tax bill. And it's important that you don't assume that all the money that you've earned is yours. So, you know, I always say to my clients, I give them, depending on their situation, I will advise them on a typical amount that they should put aside, probably on the prudent side, but just so they've got something that they know as soon as they get the tax bill, it doesn't kind of come out as a big shock. The other thing is, particularly in year one, which a lot of freelancers get caught out of, is there's a thing called payments on account. And what that essentially is in year one, you get taxed at 100% of profits or however it's assessed. And then also you have to pay 50% of the tax bill for year two up front. That potentially is a big shock sometimes if you've got a sort of potentially a $3,000 tax bill plus another $1,500 to find on top of that. So that's one biggie that, particularly moving from employment, that freelancers need to be aware of.
It means being organised. We ask you for your freelance accounting tips on Twitter. Nicola says, record every bit of income and expenditure as it occurs. Don't be tempted to leave it to do later, even when you're busy. Stuart agrees. He says, write down everything. And Priscilla says, keep your receipts in one place and save money for your tax bill. Andrew Minsky agrees that decent record keeping is very important and it shouldn't be left to the last minute.
The problem with sort of giving your accountant, say, a shoebox of receipts at the end of the year is that you might not necessarily know how you've done during the year, and therefore you don't know how much to put aside for your tax bill and that sort of thing. So it can be advisable to do some sort of record keeping yourself, just so you've got a feel of where you're at with things.
Now, one of the advantages of being a freelance is you're taxed on your profits, not on your income. That means that allowable expenses related to your business can be deducted from what you earn.
I'm John Norris. I'm a freelance writer, and I work for an online accountancy firm called Crunch. HMRC don't have a kind of yes and no list of things you can claim. They have a rule called wholly and exclusively, which means that you can claim things as an expense if it's wholly and exclusively for business use. So, for example, if you're buying a new laptop that you're planning to work from, that would be fine because that's obviously a laptop for your business. But if you were buying like an Xbox or something like that, you know, for me as a writer, I would probably struggle to justify that as a business expense, unless perhaps I wrote about video games, then it would probably be okay. There are very complicated rules around how you can claim for a room in your house. You can do it, but it has to be worked out on a percentage basis, both of the space you're using and of the time you're using it for. So, for example, if you had a five-bedroom house and you're using one bedroom as an office, you could roughly say that was 20% of the space. If you're using it to work from for 8 hours a day, that would be a third of the time. Yeah. So then you would have to work out the total rental value of the house, divide that by five, and then divide that by three. It's very complicated. Depending on how often you work from home, it can be worth doing. Sometimes it's just not worth bothering.
You don't have to go and pro rata everything, however. There is a simpler way for some, as Andrew explains.
For self-employed people, there is a flat rate amount that HMRC will allow, and that's, they won't challenge it if you claim the flat rate amount. And that's for people who don't really do much from home, but they do a bit of admin, I guess. If you're actually doing a significant amount of work from home, then HMRC will allow a reasonable amount of costs.
The easiest way to get going as a freelance is to register as a self-employed sole trader. The paperwork is minimal, and you and your business are effectively the same. However, once the work starts flooding in, there comes a point when another option could be of interest, and that's registering as a limited company. It's a separate entity from yourself, and that has some possible benefits in terms of tax planning.
Depending on the way you choose to pay yourself, you may be able to limit your national insurance if you choose to pay yourself with dividends rather than a salary, dividends being the shareholder of the company. The dividends don't attract national insurance at all. So there is some potential tax savings to be made there. And there are the higher your income is, the higher there is more tax planning availability, because the tax they pay is on what they take out of the company, not what they've earned. If you had profits of $30,000 as a limited company, you would save about £2,000 in tax. If, say, you know, you have a spouse who isn't making use of their basic rate tax band, you could, they don't have to work in the company to do this, you could give them some shares and take further money out of the company. But something like that, for example, if you're married, there's that sort of flexibility as well.
John at Crunch Accounting explains more.
If you're a sole trader, you'll pay income tax and national insurance on your earnings. That's kind of it. That's your only option. If you're a limited company, you can pay yourself a regular salary, or you can take out some of the money from your company as a dividend, which is taxed at a lower rate than a salary, or you don't even have to take the money out of the company at all. You can just leave it in there. Or you could pay into a company pension, or you could pay for insurance. There's all sorts of stuff you can do.
Now, it's a fact of life that freelancing often means waiting longer than you'd expect to be paid. How do you go about chasing without burning bridges? John at Crunch has some tips.
I think the important thing to remember is a lot of people, especially when they first start freelancing, they don't realise quite how common late payment is. You know, I would say probably easily over half of the invoices I've ever issued have been paid late. And that's, you know, having had lots of experience putting fairly decent credit control processes in place, it's just it's kind of the lot of a freelancer, because we're always the last person in the chain. So I think the best thing you can do is have a really good relationship with the person at the client company who's in charge of making sure your payment gets processed. That might not be the actual client you deal with on a day-to-day basis. It might be somebody in the payroll department, and you don't have to rely on going to your contact there, them emailing the accounts department and sort of creating more work for everybody. If you can go direct to the person that's in charge of getting your payment processed, then that's great. If the payment is late, don't freak out, because it probably doesn't, or it almost definitely doesn't mean that they're not trying to pay you. It often just means that, like, their bookkeeper's off sick or something like that, and you know, it's fallen down between two desks or something. And as soon as you just phone them up and politely say, oh, you know, I was just wondering about my payment, could we get that processed, that, you know, 90% of the time they'll say, oh yes, really sorry about that, and they'll get it done straight away. If it does begin to look like they're kind of withholding payment, or you're not going to be paid anytime soon, that's when you can potentially get a bit legal with them. So you can. There's a piece of legislation called the Late Payment of Commercial Debts Act, which lets you start charging interest and penalties once the invoice is 30 days overdue. And that's even if you don't have payment terms written into your contract. It's kind of, it lets you imply payment terms into the contract. So you can issue them with a one-off penalty. You can charge interest. I mean, it's worth saying I've never actually had to do that. The one client that I've had who paid me very late, I basically just mentioned the name of the legislation and they paid me straight away. It's kind of like you have to get your big boy boots on and start threatening people a little bit.
Back to Twitter and some of your freelancing tips. And John, another John, says you can get a solicitor's letter before action to threaten late payers for just a few pounds. And normally it works. But how do you go about accounting for late payments? Say, for example, you invoice in one tax year and you don't get paid until the next. It depends on whether you're a sole trader or you formed a company. Andrew Minsky explains more.
For a limited company, it's based on the accruals basis, which is essentially the date of that you, if you've done the work, it's not even if you've invoiced, but if you've done the work and you've got a right to income effectively, then you have to account for that as income. With the sole trader, they introduced some new rules that allowed people to account for the tax on a cash basis. Because of the rules that govern the Companies Act rules that govern companies, that's not possible for a limited company. So you could tend to get 9 months before the deadline to file a tax return anyway. So even if your client is a late payer, hopefully within 9 months you'll know if you're actually going to get the money anytime soon, or whether you just have to write it off. And obviously, if you write it off, then you don't have to pay tax on it.
Now, while there's a mad rush to file tax returns before the end of January deadline, if you're feeling super organised, you can do yours any time from the 6th of April this year. John says getting a head start has clear benefits.
The people who turn up with 10 minutes to go and demand that their accounts are finished will inevitably be disappointed, because that's not really how accountancy works. You have to, you know, if we can work with people throughout the year, and this applies to all accountants, you know, if you can work with people throughout the year, you can help identify areas where they could be being more tax efficient, or potentially expenses that they're not claiming and all that kind of stuff. And it also gives you time to fix any errors. If you're on top of it throughout the year, it gives you time to deal with any mistakes. I actually know quite a few people that do it that way. And as soon as they're able to do it, they just do it to get it done. And actually, I mean, that can work in your favour, because sometimes you'll get a tax refund and that means you get the money up front and you have a bit more cash to play with.
And what's more, the penalties for letting it slip can be harsh.
If you're a sole trader or director of a limited company, if you don't get your self-assessment in on time, if you're a minute late, then you get a £100 fine straight away. They really don't mess around with that one. And then if you delay further, there are other penalties down the line as well that are percentages of the tax you owe and daily penalties and that sort of thing. So it can be very, very costly if you don't get your self-assessment in on time.
Just a reminder that some of the topics we've been discussing in this podcast are based on general information. It doesn't constitute financial advice. You should always do your own research and seek advice based on your specific circumstances. The last word comes from Mike on Twitter. He says, one tip, get a good accountant. You've been listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast.